Chase the sun. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. This is episode 46. I am here with fellow comedian Kevin Tinkin. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, just like thinking.
Just like thinking, it's Tinkin. Kevin is somebody that I met up in Fresno, did a show with him, and then did a show last weekend in Wine Country. Had a fuck ton of fun. That was awesome.
That was a great show.
Oh my God, great weekend. So I found out that his kids are almost identical to the age of, you have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, correct?
Yeah, my son Will's 4 and my daughter Anne just turned 3.
Just turned 3. Okay, so you're at, wow, those are even closer. Is that Irish twins? Is that the term they use for that?
Will's going to be 5 in June. So yeah, but he's it's kind of Irish. I was like, let's get another kid in there. Let's do this.
Was that purely intentional?
It was pretty intentional. My older brother and older sister, there's like 15 years between me and my next sibling.
Oh.
So I was like, I kind of want them to be able to grow up together and be buddies and whatnot. So, we wanted to have them pretty close together and then just cut it off.
Now, this is another reason why I wanted to have you on the show, because it's been a kind of a common theme that's coming up. And I know that you've seen me talk about it in my act, is where people refer to becoming parents as a blessing. Now you comment on stage that you are a man of faith, and I've heard tale of your children and that they are nothing but the sweetest, kindest kids, that are adorable. And so I imagine from the outside looking in that you were just this nice little happy, you know, family. And so I was curious if you consider your kids to be a blessing.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, every weekend we get together and we just make the decoupage cutouts, you know, and we just sing the Disney songs on the way to our special Disney adventures every day. And it's just, you know, it's just a real blessing. It just fills my heart with so much joy. And every night when I tuck them into bed, I just thank the Lord. Can I have one more day? Just one more day of pure joy. And then somebody hits somebody else in the crotch. And I start drinking, and then it all goes to hell.
It's downhill from there.
Yeah. No. they are great. I mean, the kids are great, but they're little demons. Like they just have their own agenda for everything. So like it's good times, but it's also a bit of hell, you know?
Yeah. And how crazy is that jump from 1 to 2? That to me, here's why I'm thinking of this, is that this week we're about to go on vacation next week. My wife and I are going on our first vacation by ourselves in 4 years. And it's insane to me because the way I did it was, my son was asking to go like see a movie with his mom and I. And I didn't like the idea of getting a babysitter and then having him watch the three of us walk away and leaving him here with a babysitter. Like, I just felt bad for his little 2-year-old brain. Like, that kind of broke my heart a little. And so I said, so I came up with this. And then my dad was kind of saying, he was kind of commenting that he's like, you know, it's kind of unfortunate that we don't get to have any one-on-one time with Jack, which is my little guy. Mm-hmm. So I had this idea with my son. I go, well, what if we do this? I said, what if we take Jack to Vavon Grandpa? He gets to have a fun week with Vavon Grandpa, and you get to have a fun week with just mom and dad. How does that sound? He's like, okay. And I'm like, great. Now nobody gets hurt. Because originally when my dad said that he wanted to just take Jack, my wife was like, well, Jack's not really aware of if he gets alone time with grandma and grandpa, but Jacob is aware of his brother getting to go have fun at their cabin and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I'm on day 2 of having one child again. Oof. And man, I feel sorry for Jack. I just really feel sorry for that poor son of a bitch, because it is fucking awesome.
There's always that balance where you have to remind yourself that you love your kids, because when they're gone, you're loving life.
Yeah.
It's just like you're going, gosh, this is amazing. Like, this is so great. And then you're like, wait a second. This is a bad feeling. I'm supposed to miss my children. And then you're going, well, I'll try to miss them.
My wife said this morning, I felt like such an a-hole, because my wife said this morning, she goes, I'm starting to miss the little guy. And I was like, yeah, me too. Totally lying. Totally lying. Full face right to her face. Just said, you know, I was like, I'm having the time of my life.
I feel like I'm getting cast to do something, and the producer's going, all right, go action as a father. And I'm going, Yeah, you know, it's. I guess it's pretty nice not having the kids around. He goes, just stick to the script. Stick to the script. I'm like, oh, I love my children. I'm having a really hard time without them here.
It's these great moments where they're away that I gain perspective on how much I care for them and love them in my life.
Yeah. My son, we put him into a preschool deal, and I just got back from watching them sing the chicken dance song and do the farm song and whatnot. And then me and my wife just came back home because I told her I got to do this, and I was like, "This is legit. Yeah. Like just being alone, this is awesome. Nobody's fighting.
Nope.
And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to how my life will change. And those people listening to the show that have already gotten into the school years, I know that there's something new coming around the corner. I'm not that naive, but you can't sit there and judge me through your earbuds and say that it's not going to be awesome that first year or so when they're both in school and I have 6 hours of a day to myself to do whatever I want. Oh, man. And that's the weird thing. It's a very, very weird and funny thing to me because I don't understand why we put so much guilt on ourselves just for being like, it's nice to be able to do what we want to fucking do.
Absolutely.
Like, there's no...
Dude, that's that whole thought of just like having a real true thought about anything and being able to just like revel in the moment and have a pure emotion about anything without any secondary, you know, thought coming in your brain going, hey, that's not okay. Yeah. Don't think that. That's been my entire life.
Yeah.
And then kids come in and it multiplies it by 10, you know?
Yeah, because every decision that you make is also somehow subtextually. Like even things that you're not saying verbally. That's the thing that scares me the most too, is that even just by me being me, there's some kind of bad habit that I'm passing on to my child that I'm not even aware of. And it's not until he's like 20 and I see him do it, I'm like, why are you doing... Oh, that's me.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. I was watching my kids on stage just about an hour ago, and they're doing this, you know, chicken dance and whatnot. And my son, I'm looking at him just kind of mouthing the words, and, you know, he's going through the motions, and I can tell he's a little bit uncomfortable. And my daughter, she's spinning around and dancing and singing loud and just like, you know, kind of elbowing the other kids. And I'm like, I can see myself in both those reactions, the one guy that's like super self-conscious and going, oh, I'm uncomfortable. I hope this is good. I hope I'm doing the chicken dance right. And then my daughter just going, life is great. I'm doing the chicken dance. I love it. I'm like, that's me. That's me in a nutshell.
Are you saying they're equal sides of your personality? Is that what
exactly? Exactly. And then my daughter, when they got off stage, they were standing in line, and my daughter, one of these other dudes, these little kids, pushed a girl, and my daughter came up and was like, hey, no pushing. And then she pushed him, and I was just like, oh, I love it. I love it. I was like, that's my girl. That's my girl right there. Then I was like, oh, wait a second. We're not supposed to be pushing. So I was like, I had to revel in the enjoyment and then also remember that it's not okay to hit kids. But I was like, it's kind of okay to hit kids.
I kind of thought that story was going to go where you were going to come off stage and your daughter, and you were like, hey, you guys did great. And your daughter's going to be like, that was so much fun. And your son's like, I got to go back and look at the tape because I think I could have just done better.
Like, Dad, did you get that? Did you get that on tape?
Did you, when I said write that down, what I said, did you? That's a very inside comic joke for my listeners. Yeah. That's what comics do after the shows. If you're working on new bits or something like that, you'll come back and you'll go, oh, I got to watch the tape tomorrow to see how good that was or if what didn't work. It didn't feel
right. It is so pathetic and self-indulgent, but it's just like you have to be an egomaniac if you're going to be a comic because you're just – I record every one of my sets. And I'll be like – because I had to ride with Torio, who was the host at the show. And I'm like, hey, man, this is going to be weird. I kind of have a post-show ritual where I listen to my set. Is that cool? And I'm just like – what a narcissistic bastard just sitting there listening to myself, taking notes on what I'm saying. And he's like, it's like, who is this guy? Who do you think you are? I'm just trying to get better, man.
But the reality of it is that that's exactly what you're doing. That it's a work ethic. That's the only, we know, like there's a lot of the guys, they just kind of float through. But I think that there's guys that really, really care about the craft, really, really care. And it's like, it's no different than any job that anybody who's listening is doing that. If you really, really are passionate, there are people who just do a job for the sake of doing a job. And if you are doing stand-up comedy for the sake of doing the job of stand-up comedy, it's because you're uber lazy and you don't want a real job, and you kind of want to be a kid for a good chunk of your life. So those are the guys that, in my opinion, usually tend to start falling into like heavy drinking and drug abuse and all that stuff because and you, but you also rarely do you find out who they are, like, because they're not really working at anything. They're just, you know, they're just, you know, meandering through the process. But then there are guys who are like, no, this is what I want to do, and I appreciate it as an art form, and then they take it really serious. And if they, if you may, if you don't know who they are, they at least can earn a living. That's at least my interpretation of it.
And God bless those drug addicted alcoholic comedians that are just going through it. Because I look at those guys and I'm like, man, you are so free.
Yeah.
Just living in, you know, some you know, studio apartment, you know, with seven other dudes, and I'm just like, I'm so jealous, you bastards.
Right. You have a great joke about this where you go to your friend's house that are bachelors and they have like, they're living with a mouse and it's their friend and they high five their house and
just high as a kite, just loving life. They accept everything with 100% purity. There's no second thought about, is this okay? Is this normally accepted in society? No, not at all. Just like, yeah, bro, that's Tim. That's our mouse friend. Don't even worry about it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God. Gosh, I want that freedom so bad. And then I have to go back. No. I love my family. I enjoy it. It's good. Yeah, that whole joke came from a rant where I was talking to my buddies. We went to Las Vegas just on a whim. And my wife, because she's a freaking angel. Freaking angel is, it's a very special classification. she's like, yeah, go ahead, have fun. And I had the weekend off and everything, and it worked out. And we're driving to Vegas, and I'm just talking to my friends like, dude, oh, dude, this is freaking great, bro. We're going to go. Oh, this is so good. We just left. We just blowing off responsibility. Going to Vegas, dude. I want to do this every time. And then I'm like, whoa. Well, I mean, I love my family. I love my family. God forbid.
Yeah, you got
God forbid
pedal.
Anything were to happen to him.
Yeah.
And my buddy's just dying because I'm reveling in this alternative life where my family dies in like a fiery airplane crash. And I'm mourning, but I'm also secretly enjoying it because I can have the freedom to go to Vegas.
Yeah.
It's pathetic.
It is funny because, well, I have two thoughts on that. Is that, number one, there is that moment in This Is 40. Have you seen that movie yet? The Judd Apatow movie?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And where they kind of, he has a conversation with his friend about where they fantasize about killing their wives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because there was a lot of people that reacted negatively to that. And I heard him be interviewed about it, where he said, he goes, I think it's a common kind of macabre or morbid thing that exists within marriages, that you can't help but kind of daydream or maybe even to a certain extent fantasize about how your life would be had you not. And I think, here's what I think. I think that you and I are kind of in a similar boat. In that, like you said, that your wife is the only woman you've been with sexually. You said that on stage.
Absolutely.
I met my wife literally the last 3 months of our senior year in high school. And so I've only been with like four other chicks. And so I think that you and I can definitely relate on that level, where you do, as much as we love and adore and truly are happy with our wives, like I would venture a guess, I could say this for myself, I won't speak for you, but it's weird to say something complimentary and refuse to speak for someone. But what I'm saying is that I can say that I know that I have a great marriage and that I am head over heels in love with my wife, no matter how crazy she drives. And people have heard me say it, that it's that the very fact that she drives me that crazy and that I haven't left or done something to harm her just shows to me how much I truly care about this woman. You know? And yet I still have these moments of like, huh, what if? I wonder how it could have gone. What, you know,
oh yeah.
You're wired with that grass is greener kind of mentality. And it's the
same.
It's the same thing that you experience with your guys in Vegas. You're going out there and this is you getting to live the fantasy of like, you get a little bit of a weekend of where you don't have to worry about being a dad. You know, like you are responsible for anyone. But it's still not complete. It's not completely pure because I don't know if you're like me, but like when I'm on the road and I'm doing stand up and say I go out with the comics and all of a sudden somebody's like, hey, you wanna smoke some pot or whatever? I'll be like, yeah, sure. What the hell? What the fuck am I going to do? I'm halfway across the country. Even if something happened to my kids, like it's not like I could drive in the car to get there, you know? And so I'm like, ah, fuck it, you know? But there's a little bit of like, this is what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like I'm living this alternative lifestyle. And yet my wife is at home putting out some fire of some kind and dealing with screaming and fits and say, that's it. Everybody go to bed. Like there's some kind of element of that to her life. So it's never pure.
Yeah. I'm always constantly like feeling out the emotional status of my wife. And it's never like, I can never purely accept what she says because she's nice.
Yeah.
Like she's a nice lady and she's trying to be a sweetheart and supportive to me. So we're like, how's everything going? She's like, oh, it's good. You know, things are good. You know, it's very good. So Annie got 23 spankings today. And, but you know what? It's great. You know, it's really great. And I'm like, are you sure? So do you need me to? Do you need me to come out? Do you need anything? Do you want me? You know what? I'm going to call one of your girlfriends. Maybe let's set up a date night for you tonight. You know, go out of town with the ladies. She's like, no, it's fine. It's fine. Like, Are you sure? Yeah, it's fine. I'm like, I don't know. Like I'm waiting for the moment for her to just completely lose it. And I come home and all my stuff's out on the front lawn. And she's like, you bastard. How dare you not read the undertones of me saying everything was fine? I'm so sorry.
Is there any aspect of that to your wife, or is this completely your own neuroses? Has she ever like set you up to say one thing but then truly meant another?
I told my wife a long time, it's not my job to read the hieroglyphics of our conversation.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be Indiana Jones and be like, are you okay? And then she says yes, and I go, ooh, she said yes, but it sounded like a little bit of a question mark.
Yeah.
There was an umlaut over the S, I think, when she said yes. I'm like, I'm not doing that. If you want something, you tell me, and I will provide it for you, whatever it is. And I think she took that. I'll tell you this, too. When it comes to being a woman, I do a way better job of it than she does.
Oh, dude, we are kindred spirits, me and you, Kevin. We are kindred spirits.
It's so pathetic because, like, I came back.
Hold on. Let me pull out my mangina real quick.
Like, you too?
Yeah.
Oh, look. Yeah, I came home and I was like, baby, I just missed you so much. I called and she wasn't even here. And this is how much of a vagina I am. I went into the bathroom. This is not a joke. This is serious. I went in the bathroom and I smelled her shower towel. I smelled the towel because I missed her so much.
She's a lucky lady.
Yeah. And then she gets home. I gave her a hug. I'm literally tearing up just a little bit and like not even embarrassed about it. Just like, yeah. That's right. I love my wife. And one of her friends was here and I'm just like, I don't even care. And then, she was like, it's nice to have you home and whatnot. And then she kind of went about her business. And in the back of my head, I'm going, I'm not sure if she really missed me that much. I don't know if that was 100% genuine.
Smash cut to you throwing all her shit out onto the front lawn.
yeah, exactly. After I just got away for this beautiful weekend all by myself and she's here with the kids, I'm worried about the way she might be feeling. And then I'm in my own head going, no, it's fine. It's fine. No, it's fine. It's fine. Get over it. And then I'm going, no, your feelings are valid. Your feelings are valid.
So maybe you could relate to this then. So are you like me in that when you get in a fight with your wife, that you become the one who talks a lot, and does she just do a lot of nodding?
Justin, are you inside my brain right now?
Oh my gosh, this is awesome. I've never met somebody who does this.
Dude, we are all role reversal.
That's so great.
I love it because we'll go to church and they'll be like, we're going to talk about relationships today because women, you know, women, they just like to talk. They're going to solve the problem. And men have a tendency to be quiet and not say anything and go ahead and reserve and go out their man place. And I'm like, no, that is not true.
Yeah.
It's the opposite. I want to talk. I want to solve the problem right there. And my wife's like, hey, can we just take a break? And I'm like, no, Jarrah, you know, Joseph. We're going to do it now.
I've literally shared this story 3 weeks in a row on this podcast, so I apologize to the listener. But no more than now could it ring more relevant in that I had a fight with my wife, and I did my usual diatribe. Like, I'm just going. I'm filibustering because she just nods. And I stop, and then she says, okay, yeah. And then or she'll say something that's quippy back to me that doesn't, it makes me feel like I'm not, my feelings and thoughts aren't being communicated properly. So then I go back into it. And then at one point she says, can we just stop and have makeup sex already?
Ooh, and whoa.
Now here's where I might out mangina you, Kevin, is I said, no, I'm upset. And do you know how emasculating it is that I have to say that to you? That's a direct quote from a fight.
Get out of here.
Yeah. So I might be even more chick than you, Kevin.
Oh, you have the trophy right now, sir.
You asshole. You're going to come on my show. You're not even going to pretend.
No. When sex becomes an option, I could literally, the house could be on fire. Well, you know what I'm saying? Like, my kids could be in the street, you know, playing in front of some indie NASCAR race. If my wife goes, hey, you want to have sex? I'm like, I'm right there.
Well, there you go. At least you know that you're a little more manly than me. But here's the thing that comes out of it, too, though, and I don't know if you've had this with your wife, is that I've recently, within the last, like, 3 or 5 years, I've had conversations with my wife where she'll say, well, you know, I kind of wanted you, but I know you were tired because I, like, traveled all night to come home. And I'm like, "That there is no such thing as too tired.
Oh, no.
There is never a situation of too tired. You know what I mean? Like, and she's like, oh, like, because she sees it as her. And we talked about this last week on the episode that we did with the marriage counselor. And she
Which said, I listened to, by the way. Very good episode.
You already listened to that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. For those of you in that are playing catch-up or whatever, that was literally released today. Like, that was released right before Kevin and I started. Well, thank you for listening. But so you got what she said is that where she said that men need sex in order to feel loved and women need to feel loved in order to have sex.
Yes, and I have my degree in psychology, so it was right up my alley.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Oh, I did not know that. Well, no wonder you liked it. Maybe that's what I should have gotten a degree in, because I'm thinking I want to pick up some books, because all of that shit has always just fascinated me. I love that's why I wanted to have a therapist on the show, because I loved my time in therapy and I love talking. I just like talking about relationships and the dynamics between it, which is and here's the thing, like, I like to watch sport. I like football. I like racing. I like getting in. You know, my wife said something about hiring a gardener because we're buying a house right now. And she's like, oh, well, maybe we'll hire a gardener. I'm like, fuck you. I'm not hiring a gardener. Now I get to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to get up and fucking mow the lawn and then drink a cold beer when I come back inside. And that's the life I crave, because I'm getting tired of painting into this bitch corner that I'm in.
Right. Exactly. Well, the difference between me and you is that you, you're further along in the dream of doing full-time stand-up comedy.
Oh, I see.
So I still have to work, you know, I'm 9 to 5, 40 hours a week. And then I'm still gone on the weekends and stuff when I have to go out of town.
Yeah.
And, we just fired our gardener. Which is was a nightmare for me. And then my wife's like, oh, I'll do it. I'm like, oh, fantastic. You can be even more of a man in the relationship now. No problem.
Great. Thank you.
She's like, I'm going to have a penis in 3 weeks. So be prepared for that. I'm like, okay, fantastic.
Heads up on that one.
there's a book called Love and Respect where he basically kind of says, you know, women give love. Men give love in order to get respect, and women give respect in order to get love. So it was kind of that same thought. So when she was talking about that, I was just like, ooh, like that's freaking good.
Yeah.
I've learned, I'm just like, I'll give anything to get sex, like whatever it has to do. You know, I'm literally going to work so that I can get a paycheck, so I can provide a comfortable environment for this woman, so that the possibility and the odds of her letting me put my penis inside her will increase just a little bit. If I can create that comfortable environment, then maybe the possibilities will go up.
Yeah.
It's interesting because
you also talk about, and I'm sorry that I keep referencing your act. It's just the closest thing that I have to a relationship to you. I've realized in that you and I, we've had little conversations, but they've mostly been around, you know, comedy. And so it's a weird thing for comics that when you watch another comic perform, at least in my opinion, you kind of get a sense of who they are. And when I find that the comics that have more material that I can really relate and connect to are also people that I can hang out with and have fun and talk with, like, you know what I mean? And so there's this great joke that you talk about where you said the extent of your pornography is watching your wife get out of the shower and walk. And that is, honestly, I've said that a million times, that is my favorite part of the day, is when she has to leave the bathroom and go to the dresser. And I think in this new house, I'm going to put it even further away. Like, I don't know why it's so close to the bathroom. I should put it on the opposite side of the room. I mean,
you put an obstacle course so she takes her a few minutes to get there.
things that are like, it's almost like Saw, where she has to like, where there's like barbed wire and stuff that make her almost unintentionally present to me as she's walking by. Yeah,
there's a point at which she has to, you know, shake her shoulders so that they start moving back and forth
like a motion sensor.
yeah shake your breasts at the camera in order to unlock the door.
But before she does that, she has to hit play and it plays the Baywatch. I'll be there, the Baywatch theme.
Oh yeah, it's great too, because I will literally, because a lot of times she gets up earlier because she teaches fifth grade, she works 2 days a week doing that, and I'll roll over and she'll be coming out of the shower and I'm just like, oh
that's the best.
Oh, it's so great. Like I don't know what her, why she, well, I don't know how I nailed her down, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like I know that in the beginning I used to be a personal trainer, so I used to be in like really good shape.
Oh really?
Yeah, and then I got a job at Quiznos as a manager, and I was just double fisting foot long honey bacon clubs all day. So then I get diagnosed with the gout and gain about 40 pounds, and she's like, "I'm still here." Like, all right, this is me. And so I'll just roll over with my huge gut, you know, naked with my arms behind my head. It's just, it's so gross. And I'm literally looking at her just like, dude, you look good right now.
I'm so sorry, Kevin, that I'm laughing so hard. But what our listeners don't know is that Kevin would be cast in every commercial or every Disney sitcom as the dad. Like, whatever you think the middle America father would look like, it's Kevin. And there is, take this in the spirit in which it's intended, there is no ounce of historic personal training experience that is evident in your appearance. It's not whatsoever.
You truthful bastard. Yeah, that,
I wouldn't say you're an ugly man. I'm just saying that it's shocking. Like, the idea the idea of you say, like, I imagine you to be the kind of guy who could talk about a cover two defense all day long and what the advantages are of an option run versus a spread offense, and that's fine. But I would never have thought that you played high school football. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Like, well, I didn't. I was. I remember thinking when I was in high school, I was like, I had a. I mean, I'm super self-conscious, as most comedians are, and I remember thinking like, I am not super attractive, but I could work. I could have an attractive looking body. And I was like, I'll start working out. So I bought a bunch of white t-shirts and I started working out, and I was like, I'm going to look dang good, even though if the old face isn't doing the work.
Yeah.
And I gave it a shot and it lasted for about 4 years and then it was over.
And do you really honestly, do you honestly believe that's what brought you, what drew your wife in?
No. I mean, okay. If I'm going to pat myself on the back, yeah. I'm a nice guy. And and you know, not to get super cheesy, but I love my wife so much. And I told her, dude, and it's, you know, I make fun of this in a couple of my jokes, but you know, I knew my wife and like who she was as a person before I even talked to her. Cause I didn't want to like fall in love with this lady and then find out she was, you know, a horrible person or something. So I remember, you know, observing from afar to see how her character was, and which is straight out like this in Christian dating, that's, they'll say, observe her from afar and see how she interacts with family and friends, and then, you know, begin a courtship for the intentions of marriage. Just like, gosh, this is so ridiculous.
You're a literal Renaissance man.
Yeah, exactly. And I did that, and I just fell madly in love with her, and she was on board, and because we weren't having sex, you know, it was just all about conversations and talking, and me going, all right, I'm in. I'll tell you what, if we have to live in the back of my Mitsubishi Mighty Max and sleep back there, and that's all I got to offer you, are you in? And she goes, absolutely. And I'm like, this woman is an idiot. But I'll take it. I'll take anything I can get.
That's what it is to be guys like you and I, is that you find these beautiful women that are willing to. Here's the thing. I think you're a lot nicer than I am. Like, I'm kind of a dick. I was uber sweet when I was young. Like, I was all about doing everything I could to make my wife happy. And I don't know what broke that, but at a certain point, I think honest to God, We started dating kind of in like like I said, the spring semester of our senior year. And then I said, okay, I'm tired of this goofing around, just dating thing. You're either going to be my girlfriend or I'm moving on, you know? So I did that. And then after we graduated, and that was in July. And then 6 months later is when we moved in together. And so we lived the life of heathens. And
Oh, how dare you!
I know for a good 4 years before we got married. And there was a certain point in that where I knew that because of my upbringing, I have a. It's kind of a what I would call a traditional, but I think the correct term is chauvinistic, misogynistic lifestyle is what I grew up in. I was raised by misogynistic wolves. That's what I'm saying. And like to give you an example, my father once when I was 5 years old, I wanted a toy. I think I was seven actually, but I wanted this toy, and he goes, "It sounds like you need a job." I said, "I'll do the dishes." He goes, "I have your mom to do that. You need to find something." So, which was very true and valid. It was an agreed upon thing between the two of them, and that was fine. But everybody that I say that to is like, "That son of a bitch!" Like my mom.
How refreshing is that for a dad to be that real? I think that's great.
He was awesome. And, well, that's the thing too, is that it's like I love that now it's derogatory, like that you have a responsibility within the household. But whatever, that's a whole other conversation. So anyway, I went out and I got jobs, and I was like, okay, and I took care of things to make sure that we, you know, because my wife had jobs, but she never really had to pay bills like I did. My dad made me pay my own phone bill, and I wanted a pager when I was 13, so he goes, "You can get it, but you got to pay for it." And I always had jobs from the time I was 9 years old on.
Dude, we're the same person, brother.
You had a paper route too, or what?
I had a paper route at the same age.
You got it at nine?
Dude, I think it was 9 or 10, I had a paper route, and, you know, God bless my dad. He'd help me out, you know, and I remember I would be on
my
rollerblades.
What did you get? Did you grow up in Fresno?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was the Fresno B?
Fresno B.
I used to deliver the Modesto B, and I don't know if you know this, but I'm almost certain that it would be the same then, and you may not have had it exposed to you in the same way I did. The lady came to sign the paperwork to give me the paper out, and then when I put my date of birth in there, she goes, "Wait, you're only 9 years old?" And I said, "Yeah." She goes, "You have to be 12 to get a paper out." My dad said, "Just put it in my name. I'll help him."
That's awesome.
So my dad put it in his name until I became 12. And then I took it over. And then my dad liked getting up in the morning and riding the bike so much that he got a second route and just gave me the money.
What?
Yeah, he got a smaller route than what I had. And he would go out and bang that out in a half hour. So we had two paper routes from the time I was 9 until I was just under 18.
Get out of here.
Yeah, until I was 17.
That's a long time. Yeah, I think the story is better if I'm the same age as you so that we can relate more, but I think I probably was 12 now that I think about it.
No, that's fine. It just means that your father followed rules where my dad believed in a society of anarchy.
Oh, your dad was a badass.
He was. Like, you're going to kick out of this. This is on one of my albums, but a little paper route story. We had a guy who wanted a plastic bag over his paper. When it rains, you'd put them in the bags?
Mm-hmm.
So even though it wasn't raining, he always wanted a plastic bag, and he would call in and complain that his paper was getting wet from his sprinklers. And so I would like attach it to his doorknob, like with the rubber band, and I would do all these things. And there was no way this thing was getting wet. And he finally said, my dad said, "Well, why do you keep complaining?" He goes, "I just want the plastic bag." And my dad tried to explain to him that the plastic bag cost us money. It didn't cost the Modesto B more money. It cost us money. We paid for the supplies. And so the guy didn't care. So my dad, that was at the time when he was delivering that half of the route. So he would deliver it to this guy. And I think he was just helping on Sunday. That's what it was. On Sunday, he delivered that side. So,
yep. That's how we did it too.
Or this was, I think, no, it was Wednesday. You know how Wednesday was kind of bigger, but not quite a Sunday? Because I remember the paper moving around. So what my dad did was he pulled out the plastic bags, and this was the middle of summer. And I go, "Dad, what are you doing?" I go, "You're not honestly going to give that guy a plastic bag, are you?" And my dad goes, "Son, sometimes you have to realize that the customer is right." And he says this as he's walking over to the kitchen sink, and he fills up that plastic bag with the paper in it with water, ties it off like a goldfish at a pet store, and goes and delivers it to the guy's house.
No way!
And the guy never complained again.
I love your dad.
My dad, when he got his route, I think the statutes of limitations are far exceeded now because this is 20 years ago. But my dad, when he got his additional route, there was a guy that refused to pay. I don't know if you ever had hard times collecting from people, but we would occasionally run into that. And these people don't understand that was just money you were out. That was the Modesto B was never out money on this. That was money that you were out. You had to collect. So my dad decided to slash the guy's tires because he didn't pay for his paper for 2 months.
Holy crap.
So he took out probably $300 worth of tires because the guy wouldn't pay his $22 paper bill.
Oh my
so the
gosh.
Guy, the guy calls our house at, I think it was, we had to be done at 5:30 in the morning on week, no, it was 6:30 on weekdays and then 7:30 on weekends. So he calls my dad about 6:45 in the morning and he goes, "Hi, this is so-and-so. I just want you to know that I know what happened. My tires were slashed this morning," and or whatever. My dad said, he goes, "Okay, well, what's that got to do with me?" And he goes, "I happen to know that," I happen to know that it happened around 6:30 this morning. My dad said, "Awesome. I was done with the papers at 5:45. And it was a total bold-faced lie. But yeah. My father's point was, "How are you going to fucking prove it, asshole?" So the guy goes, I just want you to know that you're on my list." And my dad was very calm and talking to him. Then my dad, I just remember, this is what I did hear of the conversation, because I was in the room near his office. And he goes, "Well, I want you to know you're on my list, too." And my dad told me, the guy goes, "Your list for what?" He goes, "Haven't you heard? John F. Kennedy's been assassinated." And then he hung up the phone.
What?
Yeah, just fucking weird.
Is your dad from Sons of Anarchy? Your dad sounds like a bad mother trucker, man.
He is. He's very Machiavellian in everything, not only in his parenting, but in all things. Oh, yeah. Those were good times having the paper. How the fuck did we get on that topic? I apologize for being the host of this fair program and allowing it to wander so far.
This is riveting conversation, I'll tell you what. Just like I know when I pull up my list of podcasts, I always type in a search for paperboy stories. And I think we're finally giving it to the people exactly what they wanted.
Well, then let's end that search and let's you and I start our own podcast called Paperboy Stories.
Paperboys Remember.
But that's what I was telling about, is that we were talking about our backgrounds and how what happened when I moved in with my wife. I had like two or three jobs and she had one job, and we were both going to like a junior college in Stockton, California. And one day she went to her job at Gottschalk's and just came home and was like, "My manager pissed me off, so I quit that job." And I looked at her and I go, "Well, what you do is you find another job before you quit this job. That's not how it works. Like, how is it that me at 18 years old understand this and you don't?" Like,
right.
And so
she's gangster, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, or a princess. It was probably a better way to put it. She was definitely a princess before she met this sack of shit. But so anyway, I said, "Well, okay." I said, "Well, you could just go to school. I'll find another job." Here's how I thought, though, that I was being a real man. This is where my true teenage-dom shown through, is that I said, "But here's how it's going to go down. I'm never going to cook a meal. I'm never going to do a load of laundry. And this apartment needs to be cleaned, at least, you know, whatever area is not occupied by our roommate." I will pay for your school. I will pay for everything with the jobs that I earn, and we will go in this together. But this is how you're going to contribute. It's not going to be just, me, you just living off of me, kind of a thing."
Right.
And she was like, and then of course she looks at me going, "All I gotta do is fucking cook and clean. You're gonna pay for school and everything. Well, fuck, I could do that."
Like, yes.
As I now know, it takes maybe 20 minutes to clean a 600 square foot apartment. it wasn't a palatial estate, you dumbass.
Well, this is why you're such a nice guy, I think.
Well,
it shows you being a nice guy, because in your heart of hearts, you're saying this and you're like, I'm going to be honest. This is how it's going to work.
Yeah.
And then there's probably a party that goes that feels a little bit like, man, this is really misogynistic and chauvinistic, nope. But hey, I just, this is how it's going to be. And she's going, "Gosh, this idiot's going to think that's hard work."
Yeah.
I'll do it.
Well, that's where you're wrong, that there was never a part. This is where I don't mind being called misogynistic, because I don't really have a problem with it, is that I think that misogynism is really there are certain people even to this day that now live what would be considered a traditional marriage or relationship or however you would define it, where the man brings home the majority of the money and the woman helps out with the house and takes care of the kids. And the difference between me and what I would consider to be the derogatory term of misogynistic is that I think that lifestyle is a nice way to go, because usually people that live that lifestyle, it's what suits them best. You know what I mean? It's, and even though I'm living the opposite of that lifestyle, I've had to learn to overcome, because I went through a really fucking hard time when I was home alone with my kid, and he's a baby, and I had to feed him breast milk, and I had to wait for my wife to come home for her lunch break to pump so that I had something to feed him. That really fucked with my wiring, because I'm sitting there going, it's my job to feed and care for this child, and yet I am not biologically equipped to properly do that. That to me says that there is something wrong with what we're doing here. And I had to, and I would get in my own way about that stuff, because I would freak out that if he doesn't eat exactly when he needs to eat, we're fucked. He's, you know, something's going to go wrong with him, and he's going to grow up and be bad at math or, you know, or something. Yeah. And so that, it really, really messed with me. And then as I became more experienced as a father and a parent, and then I kind of realized it. And now I've painted myself fully into the corner of, you know, when my wife says that she's made the lunch for the kids, I go and I check it. Like, she's the husband. And I'm the wife, where I go, all right, what's lunch to you? Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm half expecting to see just an apple in a fucking bag and there's something, you know, and some chips, you know.
$3.
Yeah.
Go buy yourself a couple of bean burritos.
But ever since that moment with my wife is when I think I kind of became more of a hard-nosed asshole. And I don't let things go very easily, I guess was the point of that story. I don't know where I was going with it from
there. Well, shoot, man. I think when you have a defined role and you can just own it, you can just be pure in your feelings. And
yes.
That may come off as asshole, but I think it's just, hey, this is how it is. I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you, so you know where I'm coming from. Then she can respond that way, as opposed to trying to read the hieroglyphics. You know what
exactly.
I'm saying?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's well, as you heard in that episode with the therapist with Rachel. Why do I keep calling her by her title? Everybody knows her name now. With Rachel, is that when I told her what I told my wife, she goes, "That's great. That's perfect." And I'm like, that has never been said about anything about the way I've treated my wife. Never have those words been spoken to me.
Oh yeah.
But that's who I am. And that's what I, not solely, I'm not saying that I'm solely responsible for it, but I'm saying that I know that that is the biggest and main reason why my wife and I have the awesome relationship that we have, is because there are no fucking holds barred. Like, it is the Hulk Hogan movie all over again with Zeus and him in a cage match to the death, where I tell her this is exactly what I'm thinking. And after going to some therapy, I've realized to say, listen, I'm aware that this is unfair, what I'm about to say to you, but I can't not say it. So just take it in with a grain of salt. You know what I mean? And then I tell her she's a horrible piece of shit human being. And then
you're going, here's what I'm going to say. It's going to be horrible. It's going to be bad. I don't know what to say it any other way. If you could just shave off a 0.1% of what I'm saying and smell that, just, you can know where I'm coming from.
Right.
But I'm not feeling it at 100%.
Yeah.
I hate your guts.
Yeah, I just want you to fucking die. But other than that, I'm good. I'm totally good.
Dude, well, before I started doing comedy, man, which was about, it was only been about a year, we were going through some rough times, man. I was kind of in a depression and whatnot, so I'm sitting there looking at my wife going, you're not providing all that I need from you emotionally. You know, I never said this verbatim, but it was just like I wasn't fulfilled in my life because I wasn't doing all the things that I felt like I'm a funny guy. I need to be out there trying to make people laugh, and because that really feeds my soul, man. It really does. And when I wasn't doing that, I was looking for all my fulfillment from my wife. And she obviously couldn't do it because she's not going to laugh at all the dumb crap that I say every day. So I start doing comedy. I start getting this fulfillment from comedy. I'm a happier person. I can love her better, you know, and do all that stuff. And I think, I mean, it's really kind of in a weird way, you know, doing comedy and, you know, being on the road and being fulfilled in that way has really helped our marriage a ton.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I think about that a lot, is that I daydream, even though I do stand up full time. I do daydream and have these moments where I'm like, man, wouldn't it be great if I just could, you know, work a regular 8-hour day and do a job that I really don't have to think about. Like, I could just do it, and there's no consequence to my personal being or soul. Like, that's the hard part about doing this for me personally, is that a big chunk of it is also what defines me. So when you,
well, I'll say this right now, and I usually don't cuss or whatnot, but you can go yourself.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a very valid point. There's probably a lot of guys that are doing whatever their job is that are like, I would love to go around and tell jokes and just be an asshole and make a check. And I'm sure, but again, I think it brings me back to my previous point, is that really what it comes down to is the grass is greener. And if there's anything, any ounce of perspective that I've gained in my limited 34-year perspective, it's that even if I did go do that 8-hour a day job, there would be something else that would probably make me a little less happy. So all we are really trying to do is trying to figure out the most efficient way of being happy as we possibly can. And if that's telling jokes, then that's great. If that's finding some bullshit job that you don't really give a shit about because you just want to come home and hug your wife and kiss your kids and go on a vacation on a boat every now and then, or just sit in front of a ball game and drink a beer or whatever that is, then that's great. That each person defines what that is for them. But I can't sit here and not sit there and think that when you grow up being told that you're funny constantly and people that's what defines your character. And when you make that choice to do that as a living, and then what that does for me personally is that every success or failure, is it just like, because I heard Jerry Seinfeld talk about how if he doesn't get laughs or has a bad set, he doesn't take it personally. He said they just didn't like the act. And for me, the act is me. Like that's me thinking that these things are funny. I think these are funny, and other people have told me that they are funny by laughing at them. And when you don't think they're funny, then it's like, oh, well, what if I'm not funny? Like,
oh, yeah.
And it's taken me a long time to get over that hump of saying, it's okay if one crowd or one person or whatever doesn't like you. As long as your average is above 80 to 90%, then you're okay. You're just fine. Everybody's going to be doing great. So don't even trip.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a there's a thing about it. Like if you are funny, you know, which as comedians, I think we are, and you hear that a lot. But then you go on stage and you're so obsessed. You want to make the crowd laugh. At least I do. And you want so much for that, and you get fulfillment from that. And if they don't laugh, you start to question yourself, and then that shows up on stage.
Yeah,
you know, and then you're not yourself anymore. And then they're not going to laugh even more. And it's just like this huge rolling, you know, snowball of failure on stage. And that's been the biggest part for me, is to get over that and just be like, dude, you're funny. Just go up there and be you, and you'll be great. And it's because it ain't easy. I'm always worried about rejection. Yeah. And then I'm thinking about the script of who I'm supposed to be as this guy that grew up in church and still calls himself a Christian and all that stuff. And then I've got this script of how I'm supposed to be. And then I want to make people laugh. And then there's stuff that happens in real life that's, you know, not real Jesus filled. You know, like when I'm smelling my own feces and I think that smells like my dad's feces. And then I'm like, I really miss my dad. Start getting nostalgic. You know, like this happens, and then I'm going, should I talk about that on stage?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I tell that joke about my wife catching me masturbating.
Yeah.
And, you know, that didn't happen like that, but it was a thought that I had, and I'm like, this is hilarious. It is such a picture of who I am.
Yep.
It's such a picture of what marriage is really like.
Yes.
And, but it's not purely 100% clean. And then I'm just struggling with that. And then I would do it and it would kill. And I'd be like, oh, man, I kind of wish it didn't kill because now I kind of have to do it.
But you know this. You know that, not to make this more of a comedy podcast, but I think you know this, and there is something that can be applicable to all of us, is that that more that you get to the crux of who you are, that's always going to be what it is. Like I think you and I had this conversation where my first two albums that I did were clean. And I remember I used to feel so great when people would come up to me after the show, and it would happen almost every show. They go, you were really funny. And you know what I really appreciated? That you didn't have to be filthy to be funny.
Yep.
And it would always like go, oh man, my grandma would be so happy. Like I would always say that. And there was a certain sense of pride that I took from being able to say that my grandma could come see any show that I ever did, and I would not have to worry about her being offended. There were some things that she might go, oh, I wouldn't share that, you know, but
right.
But there was nothing really truly offensive. And then for whatever reason, I tried doing a couple shows where I cursed, and then it just felt dirty. And then I just was like, you know what? I'm going to do this just for the sake of an experiment. The next CD, I'm going to be dirty, and I'm going to try and see if I have the same reaction of people coming up to me afterwards saying, oh my God, that was so funny, and I like that you were either raw or real or whatever. And I thought that it was all about whether or not I was cursing or whether or not I wasn't. And what I learned is that this new chunk of material, I think, very well represents not only who I am, but my sense of humor. And that's really what people are connecting with and they're relating with. And that there's it's a weird thing that maybe us as comedians overanalyze, but there's that sense that we feel comes through subtextually that people can connect and relate to, and from your story and your perspective, that the more, so that's why everybody says the more you could be you on stage, then the better mm-hmm. you are. But if a part of you, and I think that's why what makes what you're doing so good, in my opinion, is that a part of you is also exploring that through your sets, is that you're saying, you know, I go to church and I have these unchurchy thoughts, you know, and I think that's why everybody can relate to that. Everybody can get that, an aspect of that. And even if they can't personally feel it, they can easily connect with what you're trying to communicate and that kind of split or dichotomy you have within yourself.
Yeah, I'll have conversations with you know, pastors and whatnot, and I'll just be like, I'm going through this struggle, you know, I'm going through this, I don't know, I feel like I know what I'm supposed to be doing, and I just feel like I feel a little bit guilty, but I've been depressed, you know, for a good chunk of my life because I haven't been doing this, and I'm second guessing myself and whatnot, and it came down to it was like, look, if you really think you're a Christian, if you really, you know, think that and you believe in that stuff, there's a huge element of grace and whatnot. And I think when you get down to it, it's like people are people.
Yep.
We're all human beings. And I think, you know, you think about your grandma would appreciate it. I think, at least I've been trying to convince myself that this is true, that my dad's going to be more happy about me being fulfilled as a man and as a human being and happy with who I am than he is with, you know, whether or not I talk about, you know, having a boner.
Yep.
On stage, you know, and I've had to wrestle with, I'm still wrestling with that, but, you know, cause I do videos for the church and whatnot. And I just, my biggest concern is I don't want to affect somebody's relationship with, you know, their relationship with God based on like, oh, you know, I used to love Jesus. And then I went to, this comedy show and he talked about having an erection and now I'm not sure if God's real. I'm just like, no, you know, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, but there's never that. Here's what was more likely to happen. It's funny that our brains are wired to go to the negative, but when I hear you say it, it's easy for me to see it, is that just like this show, this show is a prime example, in my opinion, of I had an opinion about parenting that I felt I was alone in, but I knew that I'd done stand-up about it and people laughed at it. So mm-hmm. I was like, well, I'm going to do a podcast for dads that reflects who I am as a dad, where I truly love my children like crazy, but I think it's very interesting and funny to talk about how much I enjoy them not being around. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a shit ton of fun, and it's real, and it's honest, and it's true. And what comes out of that, what has come out of that is that this show has grown. I mean, it's a top 30 podcast in the kids and family section. And that's on a month that I haven't been able to keep up with episodes. I mean,
that's awesome.
And we're picking up more and more people behind the show and the listeners of the show. And I'm saying this almost as if they're not in the room, but clearly they are, that it's nice because I appreciate I get emails from people that, you know, have said, thank you. You know, you either you've saved my marriage, or thank God, because it's a little bit of catharsis that I get on my drive to work and when I come home, I feel like I can hug my kids and laugh about whatever's driving me nuts, because I know that and I don't feel guilty anymore because a lot of them felt like this. They were the only ones who felt that way, and that you carry that guilt, and it's just such an unfair burden. And I think that what you can do is you can use this, your own personal experiences, and find ways of people who are maybe you would consider to be quote unquote on the fence of faith, and that you could put it into a perspective that they're like, oh, okay, so I don't have to go protest dead soldiers' funerals anti-gay and all that stuff. Like, I can experiment and be cool with a little bit of gray as I find my own path through my own faith, kind of thing. So
absolutely, I think the biggest criticism of religion is that people are a bunch of fakers. You know, they're trying to stick to the script, and I'm going, dude, this is who I am. You know, I still love the Lord, but I smoke clove cigarettes. You know what I'm saying? Just chill out.
Look out, spokesperson deal. I know.
Try Dejarum Blacks. Smooth, and they'll definitely kill you, but they're delicious.
My name's Kevin Tinkin, and I'm a comedian. And when I'm ready to meet the Lord and Savior, I want it to happen just a little bit sooner. And that's why I smoke Dejarum Blacks.
It's beautiful. Well, hey, no, and I wanted to say too, because
why wait to meet the Lord?
I did want to say it because you had mentioned about your comedy. If you haven't seen this guy do comedy, you are insane, man.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
Dude, insanely good. Just destroying. People are, I mean, I almost felt bad. Like I was going to have to bring in some sort of a Buterol inhaler for some of the people in Sonoma.
Oh,
they were just falling out of their chairs.
That's very kind. Well, it's, and what it is I've noticed is that it's people within the wheelhouse. If I get, if somebody's got like an 8 to 4 year old somewhere in that kind of age bracket and younger, then yeah, that's, it's a, I've noticed, and it makes me feel amazing. It's one of the things, if I can make this even more about us talking about like comedy careers or whatever, is that I really truly love doing this podcast. And if I could do this only and make a little bit, even a little bit less than what I make doing stand up comedy, I would do it in a heartbeat and be totally fine because I would never have to leave my family. Mm-hmm. But there is that weird thing that I was talking to my wife about when I came home from this weekend, is that I've hit this kind of nice stride with this material that I'm doing now, that I have moments where I have to look out. There's usually a mom or something in the crowd that will be so like laughing so hard that she's not breathing. And I go, I don't think she's taken a breath in a while. And I, as much as it would be a bragging thing, that a feather in my cap to see her pass out, I'm yeah. also aware enough to know that if somebody passes out in the middle of the show, that's going to kill all the fucking momentum. Like that's just right. going to make the show really uncomfortable and weird, because nobody's going to really just think, oh, she passed out from laughing so hard. They're going to go, oh shit, somebody just had a heart attack and they're fucking dying at the comedy show, you know?
Yeah.
And I hope this really doesn't sound like bragging, but I've had to be able to, I look at them and I kind of pace myself and go, wait till they take a breath before I go. But I really do, as a comic, I mean, you know, you love that idea of knowing that you're making them laugh, and people coming up to you and go, oh my God, I'm so sore because I laugh so hard. And
oh yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Now I just sound like I'm bragging, 'cause I didn't have a point to that.
Hey, you're recanting what happens. You know, I love, I can't remember what movie it was, but I remember, or maybe it was somebody's stand-up, they were talking about this girl saying, oh, you have to stop, because you're going to make me pee because I'm laughing so hard.
Yes.
And the guy was just like, I think it's Mike Birbiglia. He's just like, the fact that I could affect something down there.
Yeah.
Like, he was That's like, this is awesome.
Isn't it Sleepwalk With Me? Do you think it's his movie that he talks about that, or no?
It might be. I mean, and it's a retelling on all three of his the show, and then his stand up. So it could be. It could be that one.
Well, let's shift gears a little bit, because while we're talking about Sonoma, this is something that some fantastic people that came to see me at Sonoma. And this is what I also love about doing the material that I do, is I love talking to parents after the show and hearing poop stories or funny things their kids said and stuff like that. So I know that we've done them as segments before, but if you're a new listener and you have a funny poop story, please feel free to email it in at show@thedadpodcast.com. Or if your kid said some weird shit, and I love all that stuff. It really does tickle me. But these parents came out, and their kid is 17 years old, and he might actually be listening to this show. They said that he likes comedy a lot, and they were going to recommend the podcast to him, which I thought was funny. But
that's awesome.
They said that with their kid, they were laughing about how I talked about how we celebrated, my wife and I, when our son went poop in the potty for the first time, and how we get all excited and how sad it is. And they said that they sang the Super Duper Pooper song. And I go, I am not familiar. And so they said, well, Google it. And they sent me a nice email and reminded me about it, but I'd already Googled it, and I played it just before we started the show. And I could not let another episode of the show go by where I have not played this. So if you've already heard it, buckle up for some more enjoyment. If you have not heard it, prepare yourself for the craziest thing. This thing is probably – you've seen the video, Kevin. What do you think, like mid-80s, late-80s, does that look like?
I didn't see the video.
Oh, there's a video that goes with it. It's an African-American family. And
that was very politically correct of you, by the way.
These are some colored Negroes. And but it's so funny because it's just so bad. It's so bad. Like they do On Top of Old Smokey, but they sing On Top of the Potty. And this girl is reading a book while she's going to the bathroom and talking to her teddy bear about going to the bathroom. And it's just so disconnected and unreal. But they close with this great, great song that is just so appropriate to our lives. And yet, when you look at it from the outside of the perspective of parenting, it is not only the shittiest thing, pardon the pun, that you can ever see, but it's just so incredibly inappropriate for these parents to be singing this with their kids. So buckle up for Super Duper Pooper.
Thank you. when she has to go. Take a bow, she's a big girl now. She's the best pooper we know.
Yay! Now, isn't that just the dumbest shit in the world?
She's the best pooper we know.
Yeah.
So what the fuck are we doing? What the fuck are we doing?
How is that a thing? How is that a thing?
I'm so glad I didn't watch that before. It's too good.
It's worth it. You have to watch the YouTube clip of it. Just Google Super Duper Pooper, and you might see the whole like little mini episode. It almost looks like an after school special of sorts. And oh my God, Kevin, it is the worst like thing in the world. Like, I just.
Oh, but you know what? You know what's so bad and good about it is I see myself in the video.
Oh yeah, you could definitely go. Yeah, you did it. All right.
And I've said cheesier and stupider things to my kids when I'm trying to encourage them too.
Yeah, You always have to oversell things like an asshole, and it. Yeah. Oh, it's the worst ever. So, Super Duper Pooper. There you go. Just the like. Here's the thing that blows my mind. So they had a production meeting. You understand? They had writers sit down and say, "Here's what we're gonna do. We have to find and wardrobe people got involved because this little girl sits on a toilet." And so they're like, wardrobe people had to not only go, what's going to look nice on camera? We got to find it. It's not a pattern, so we're going to need to stick to solid colors. And it's probably going to need to be a dress long enough to where we don't actually see the toilet or feet or any underwear or anything like that while she's using the business. So we can't think about it. We can't talk about it. But we're going to fucking sing about it. And she's going to be talking to a teddy bear that I think has underwear on or a diaper, too. Like, it's just... And then dad's like talking to her through the door, but he's talking to her like, you know, in that Barney fucking talk. Why I hate that show so much is where he's like, well, make sure you wipe and wash your hands. Like, yeah, exactly. If somebody fucking talked to their kid that way, I would love for them to be drugged behind a truck. I swear to God.
I will drive.
Exactly. Because I'm like, are you kidding me? Nobody should talk to anybody. Like that. And nobody has the energy or the rest or the enough sleep in their bank to be able to go, and don't forget to wash your hands. It's never that way. And so you got to make me look like an asshole. Like I've said in my Caillou Chung, is that I have to look like an asshole to my kid because I'm like, hey, wash your hands, get your ass out of here. We got to go. We're late. That's right. What's really going on. But every dad.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt.
What's
crazy is that. Like there, when you talk about when, you know, if you're the type of parents that, you know, do the decoupage and, you know, sing Disney songs as you go down and like, there are people that really feel that way. And yeah. I think that's crazy.
I really don't know that there, I would love, if you're listening to the show and you really, you can't listen to the show for 5 minutes and be that person. There's just no fucking way that you could be like, yeah, because I really want to do a psychological experiment on them. Like, that's what I want to figure out. What the fuck is going on in your brain? Because on our side of the fence, I feel like we're pragmatic and realistic, and that they're in some disconnected fantasy land. Like, that's what I think.
Well, maybe it's just that I want those parents to be real. I want them to exist.
But, like, I know what you're saying, is that because then that means that there is an almost utopic thing, I guess. Is that where you're coming from?
I just guess I want to believe that human nature can have that it possible.
Yeah, that purity.
Yeah, I mean, when somebody asks us how life with children are, I mean, me and you are going to cry, and they're going to cry. The difference is there's going to be tears of joy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, our kids are just such a blessing. And I'm just like, okay.
But even then, Kevin, you have shed tears about missing your wife while you went to Vegas for a weekend. So... That exists, but there's a certain realism that I think, and here's the other thing, that this is where I probably will lose most of our listeners, is that that's my biggest bitch about these fucking shows and anything that's made for kids, is that we've gotten in this mindset that you, anything for kids, you have to talk to them like they're an idiot and protect them from anything that could be quasi-real. You mean to tell me that we have so many entertaining and creative people in this world that they can't find a way of actually putting a real mom in the show where, you know what I mean? Like a mom that kind of loses her temper every now and then, but doesn't but it's not a way. Like, here's what pisses me off. Every father who busts his ass in the movies that are like a family movie, any dad who busts his ass to make a living so that their kids could have a bicycle and have a roof over their head and everything like that, the lesson is always that, well, all that stuff is irrelevant. All they really need is your love. A lot of kids really fucking like an iPod. So go fuck yourself on that one, okay? Stop making the dads feel like a shit whistle because he's trying to pay for kids. Because the real meta message you're sending is, hey, everybody, let's just be a fucking looser and hug each other. That's, yeah, fuck the mortgage, fuck having cable, fuck all that bullshit, all that stuff that's kind of fun to do in life. I mean, I get their point. Their point is that you need to have a balance, but let's make that the fucking point. Let's not make the point that the less dad has to work and the more that you could just sit around and stare at your fucking kids, tell you to watch this while they jump off a 3-inch tall rock and all that stuff. That's what's supposed to fulfill you as a person. That's what's supposed to make you happy. No, bullshit. You know what fulfills you as a person? Usually, it's a balance. It's that you have a job that you do that you enjoy, or that you do so that you could do things that you enjoy, and then mm-hmm. you have kids because you love your kids, and then you bring them into your enjoyment and you raise them to be, you know, upstanding citizens and people who go out and get their own jobs and make their own way and do their own thing. You don't sit around and just stare at each other and fucking hug each other all the time,
right? I think at the end of the day, if we you're gonna care about your kids,
of course,
and if you're trying, I think that makes a huge difference,
of course.
Because I think at the end of the day, most of us are so self-absorbed and ridiculous that a lot of people don't even think about other things. They're going, this, how am I feeling? I'm checking in with myself. You know, and I think if you're trying, I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, that no matter what. No, and I talked about it a little bit, I think, probably with Andy. I don't think it was with the therapist or with Rachel. Why do I keep calling her that? With Rachel was that that this idea that I really think it's interesting that the people who really care are the ones that have the neuroses of like worrying, am I doing the right thing? When in actuality, the ones doing the real damage are the ones that are indifferent to what their kids are doing and indifferent Absolutely. To their kids' lives. It's actually the people that are trying. And I think it's honestly, it's that guilt and fear of whether or not you're doing the right thing. If anything, that can become damaging is when that makes you overcorrect and you're over trying now to try and compensate for your own guilt. And then it's like, hey, everybody just calm down. Remember the movie say, just fucking hug each other and everything will be okay.
By the way, that episode with you and Andy, that was the one like two episodes back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like a man. If I were to sit down and write down every stereotype that I know about stay-at-home moms.
Yeah.
That would have been the subject of that podcast.
We just did a stay-at-home mom podcast, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I work so darn hard on this dinner, and she comes home, doesn't even care about it.
Yep.
Just like, it was hilarious. I was dying.
That's funny because some guy put on the, I can't remember your name, I'm sorry, but some guy put on the Facebook page that he was like, when I said, hey, we're going to have a marriage counselor on the show, he was like, you realize that this just supports the rumors of you having a vagina, right? Like, so now between you and me crying about how much we love our lives and how much we love and miss them when we're gone, and me and Andy complaining about how hard we work cooking meals and taking care of the kids, this is just Mangina Month. Well, that's it. In April, we're celebrating vaginas in the inappropriate way.
This podcast supported by Summer's Eve.
I gotta get some porn stars on here in the month of May or something.
Yeah, you gotta even it out. You gotta even it out. Just have the sound of a running chainsaw for 15 minutes.
Oh, Kevin, that is hilarious. That is some funny stuff. All right, well, let's wrap it up so I don't take up your entire day, and let's do some moments of the week. Yeah,
you made them, you love them, and sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the week, brought to you by Stitcher, the free app that handles all your podcasting needs without having to sync to your computer. Stream all your favorite podcasts right to your Droid, BlackBerry, or iPhone. Just go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the left-hand side. It's free, people, and they give us money if you do it.
So my moment.
That's brilliant, by the way.
Oh, thanks, man. You're very kind. My moment of the week is I just did the one. I'm trying to remember because I'm like cranking out all these episodes playing catch up this week. So I haven't had a ton of moments. So Jack has been with my parents. And immediately when we came home. Oh, you know what? I think I'm going to talk about this one because I think you would get a kick out of this. So this, I had a little moment with the director of my son's preschool. And she talked about how there was a new girl, like a hot chick in her 20s or whatever, that moved into the apartment building that is adjacent to the preschool. And that she goes up on the roof of the apartment building, which is visible from the playground, and sunbathes in a bikini. And that the kids, right? The kids have become kind of interested, but the teachers were really offended. They're like, oh my gosh. And so they're telling the director that she needs to go over there and tell them that they can't be on the roof. Like, they can't, she has to do it at a different time. These kids can't be exposed to oversex. Like,
freaking, like, Bathsheba.
And I don't know. I'm sure that there are kids. Myself, I would lump into this. I was aware of girls, and I liked to kiss girls when I was in kindergarten. But for the most part, kids don't even know about it. It isn't until, I think, in my unexpert opinion, that we force that and we inject that into them with our own fear and bullshit. So then cut to, I get a text. In fact, here, let me pull it up because it was a really funny conversation between me and her. She just texts me and says, hey, did you know your son is kind of a perv? He's found a perch. Let's see if I can put it up here. Your son is quite pervy. He has placed himself on the top of the slide with the view of the bikini babe across the street. And so I said, nice, I'm very proud. She said,
yeah.
She said, Miss Asma, his teacher, is horrified. And then she goes, lockdown time. Like, she's got to get all the kids inside or whatever. And she was talking about how there were parents that wanted a letter to be given to her to say that she needs to find a different time and this is how it's affecting these kids or whatever, when it's not. Like, nobody really – they're just curious because somebody's doing something that is unordinary. Like,
yeah.
And so I said, can I be added to the list of parents that want letters sent to her to stay out longer? I said, tell Miss Asima to teach a quick science section to explain their urges.
Yes.
And so then I found out that she has a guy with her today on that day or whatever. And so I go and I pick up my son. And so I do the probing. I go, how was school? You know, and I always do that. Usually he says it was good. I said, did you learn anything? He always says nothing, which makes me feel great about the $700 fucking dollars I give there every month. but anyway, so I'm like, well, anything exciting happen? He's got nothing, right? So he's helping me run errands. This is 2 hours later. He just randomly says, strangers were at my school today. And I said, well, how do you know there were strangers? He goes, what do you mean? I go, well, what makes them a stranger? He goes, I don't know them. I said, oh, okay. So yeah. Then I go, good point. Yeah. And then because I was trying to figure out if it was somebody else and I didn't want to lead him into this bikini babe situation. And I go, well, what were they doing at your school? He goes, well, they weren't at the school. They were near the school. I said, what were they doing? And he said, they were sunbathing. I said, oh, okay. And then he goes, Connor said they were having sex. And I was like, ooh. And he's four, right? So luckily, I'm the kind of parent, like, I had the talk with my dad when I was five, like right after my parents got divorced. And a little bit after that, my dad met my stepmom because they were both going through a divorce, blah, blah, blah. And so I asked him, because I knew the word but didn't know what it meant, I asked him if he was having sex with her. And he said, well, yeah, I am. And he goes, do you know what that is? And I said, no. And he goes, he goes, well, it's something that adults do when they really love each other and care for each other. And I was like, all right. Now, I obviously didn't understand the biology or any of that stuff. To me, it was no different than an adult version of a hug, which I think is a very safe way of explaining to it without being dishonest or making it weird. In my opinion, having had that happen to me, I did not feel overwhelmed. I do not have, and my wife will tell you, I do not have crazy sexual urges. There's no nipple clamps in my house. There's no need for them. I have no desire to go in her poop chute. I don't have any of that. I probably have more Jesus love than you do, Kevin. I'll be honest. I'm constantly in what I call the praying position with my wife.
Ah, yes, the planking.
Yes. But anyway, so I said, well, what is that? Like, I go, what's that? And he goes, what's what? I go, what's sex? He goes, I don't know. So to me, it was just maybe not. It was. I thought that the whole thing was cute. Where I know that she's, and I told her, and she was like, "Oh no, now we're gonna get." She goes, "I'm so sorry." Starts apologizing to me, and I go, "No, I don't care. Like, I think it's cute that he knows what the word is, or because some kid said it to him, but that they don't really know." And I think it's interesting that these parents that she's talking about. I'm not talking about obviously the people listening to the show, or if you do disagree with this or whatever, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I just think it's funny from my perspective. There are parents that are freaking out and wanting letters written because their kid finds out the word sex. And I'm like, why is that such a bad thing? We all enjoy it. Like, why is it? Like, let's lighten up. And I, because she goes, well, now I have to worry about, she goes, I'll probably have to go over there and talk to her to find a different time. And I said, why? I go, why is it such a big deal that the kids learn from another kid the word sex? I go, it's not like he was giving them diagrams and whoring out the girls as surrogates to the boys. I go, it's not, nothing inappropriate is happening that didn't happen to any of us when we were young. There's just a certain time in your life that the word sex comes up. You spend a few years where you think it's purely nothing but anal, and then you spend a few years where you know what it really is, and then, like all things, it's secular, and you come back to wishing that it was purely anal. That's how it goes.
I remember thinking that girls pee out of their butt, and it's just a flap of skin up there. And then, like, it's, well, yeah, you just pee in her butt, and that's how she gets pregnant.
Your wife must be so proud of your sexual awareness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, it made our wedding night really awkward.
All right, your turn, Mr. Tinkin.
Well, I was thinking about the week. I was trying to listen to your story, and then the whole time I'm going, he's gonna throw it to me, and I'm not going to have anything.
It's okay.
It doesn't have to
be just this week. It could be whatever last moment that pops into your head, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had Torio, who was he's the host at in Sonoma at Murphy's Irish Pub where we did that gig.
Uh-huh.
He was in Fresno for a couple other gigs that we had earlier in the week, and he's staying at my house, and we came in the house late, and everybody was asleep, and we were being quiet, and I just told him, I said, hey, man, you're going to be sleeping on the couch out in the living room. My kids are going to get up at like 7 a.m. at the latest, and they're huggers.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to want to give you some love. So just be aware, you know? Yeah. And he's been around kids enough that I didn't think he'd be super weird. And I'm 95% sure he's not a pedophile. So
yeah,
I felt okay.
Right.
So then I wake up, I come out in the living room, and my son has his hands around him with his head on his belly, and he's like petting his belly. And I'm like, so you met Torio? He's like, I love Torio. It's like, who are you? And I always tell he's just a lover, man. My kid is such a lover. I always tell him, like, dude, you're such a lover. It's like a superpower. I'm like, you have the ability to make people happy with your compliments and your kindness and things. And so you're a very special boy. And so then I tell this to my son, and my daughter kind of catches on. And again, son's going to be 5 in June. Daughter just turned 3. And so I come in the living room right after this, because I saw that, went and took a shower, came out, and my kids are arguing over whether or not Torio is considered handsome or pretty.
I'm so glad you told this story, because it was so great.
My daughter's going, he's pretty, and my son's going, no, no, no. Boys are handsome. Boys can't be pretty. And I think he is pretty, but he's handsome because he's a boy. You guys are so gay.
I know. I like that your 5-year-old is arguing. Listen, we're not talking about the quality of his looks. That agreed. Okay. I'm just saying the way and the gender in which you are describing it is ill placed. You know what I mean? It's, if we were German, this wouldn't be a problem, because everything is designated a masculinity. That's
yes. Let's just get into the semantics of it here, yeah. Sis. I'm not saying he's not attractive. All I'm saying is it's a little emasculating to say he's pretty.
And any second that was spent on this conversation is 10 times as much time as has ever been spent arguing about the looks of Torio Van Grohl.
Yes, exactly. And I hope Torio doesn't mind me saying this, but there was another thing right after that when, you know, my son is just, you know, groping Torio, just hugging him and giving him so much love. And Torio has a little sunspot on his temple.
Mm-hmm.
And my son goes, what's that? And he's like, oh, that's a mole. He goes, who gave you that? And he's like, oh, it's just God, I guess. I mean, it just came.
Yeah.
He's like, I like it. Who are you, kid?
I mean, clearly you're doing a lot right. That's all I hear when I hear stories about your kids, is you're doing a lot right, that they're so loving and so caring, and I just can't wait for the real world to jade them. But secretly, I do hope that they can fight back against this world and just maintain their love. I like it, because I would love to be best friends with your son. I would love to. He would be the best buddy in the world. Like, you know what? I like it. I like what you're doing. I like everything about it.
Dude, I'm telling you, he's a superhero. He can just make people feel good. It's insanity.
Oh, that is outstanding. Oh, man. Well, that's been our show. You could send us an email to show@thedadpodcast.com. Don't forget, we have episodes coming up again with Dr. J. So if you have your questions for a pediatrician, send those to questions@thedadpodcast.com. And then very shortly after that, we will be doing another one with our fantastic family counselor and sex therapist, Rachel Gibbs. So please send those questions to questions@thedadpodcast.com. You can like the show. Please throw a bunch of likes up on the show, because I realized now that they've changed the way they do their thing is that I get to see, and I wanted to say this as a big thank you to those of you who like us on the Facebook page, because the episodes get posted up there and you guys have been sharing them. And the reach on these things is absolutely incredible. So I really do appreciate you guys helping to spread the word about the show. And I apologize if I have not noticed it before. It's because I was ignorant to how it was done and to see how it happened. So thanks again. And a big thank you to Oscar and Tank. They always retweet every episode that comes up. And I appreciate the hell out of those two guys. But the big thing that I've been pushing from the beginning of this year is, if you would not mind becoming a paid subscriber and supporting the show, it could literally change my life. So if you are willing to pay $2 a month to hear me talk more about my mangina and with my mangina friends, please do so by going to thedadpodcast.com. And on the right-hand side, you can either do it by doing $24 a year, or you could do it by doing $2 a month, whatever you are more comfortable with, or there's just a donate button if you want to just throw some money towards the show. I would really, really appreciate that. And again, I appreciate your understanding with me being 3 weeks behind. And I think that's it. You can find Kevin Tinkin. You can find out where he's going to be performing at a comedy club near you by going to his website, which is his last name spelled backwards. It's NEKNIET.com. Or you can follow him.
N-E-I-T.
N-E-I-T. Whoa. N-E-I-T. I think I got dyslexic. It's spelled...
Wait, those Germans.
Oh, I did. I spelt it right. Now I get it. Now I get it. So it is NEKNEIT.com.
Yes.
Do you think you could find a more difficult way for people to find you on the internet, Kevin? Do you think there would be...
There's an algorithm I did to find out what was the most difficult website address.
Because you got to... It's not like your last name is Smith and we're all going to just go to thims.com. It's
yes. I just bought comicalkevin.com. So hopefully that'll help.
There we go. Yeah, you need to do a little redirect from there. So do that. Or you can follow him on the Twitter @KevinTinkin or Facebook.com/KevinTinkinComedian. We will definitely do this again sometime. Do you have any stand-up dates you want to throw out there? This is going to go out immediately.
I have a gig at Casey's Bar in Clovis this Thursday.
Oh,
I'll tell you what.
Thursday, May 2nd? May 2nd, is that correct?
Correct, at 7 o'clock.
All right, so check that out. What about, you have anything else coming up in May at this time? Later on in May, maybe, so people are playing catch-up?
I just got, I do a podcast called Nantucket Avenue.
Awesome.
That is a storytelling podcast. It's me and three other dudes. We just tell stories, and we are as irresponsible as you were this last month, but it's been a few months where we haven't been putting out podcasts on a regular basis. But I got about 25 episodes up there, so I'm going to be doing a couple of those. I'm doing a short film for the Germ Film Festival, which it will be premiering, I believe, June 16th. But yeah, that's it. That's awesome. It, man. I'm just living life and loving it.
Feel free to send us a link or whatever to, especially like the short film or anything, and I will throw it up on our Facebook page, good sir.
Absolutely, man.
All right. Well, thank you so much again for being on the show, Kevin. On behalf of my good friend, Kevin Tinkin, this is Justin Worship saying, stay frosty.